Hey, I'm Heather, a chaos coordinator and mom of three young kids. Chaos and cookies is literally my life, with never-ending dishes, laundry, you name it. Being a mom is a blessing, but it also comes with hard days too. Together, we can find the humor and real solutions to lighten your load and clean up the crumbs. You're listening to the Chaos and Cookies Podcast. Hello, hello, and welcome back to an episode of the Chaos and Cookies Podcast. I have a special guest today named Dr. Sandra Sheinbaum, and she and I are going to be diving into maybe some panic attacks, mental health and wellness for kids, teens. She has quite the history and background in special education, psychology, health and wellness. So it's going to be a really great conversation today. And she's a health and wellness practitioner and educator, and she's passionate about transforming our healthcare system, preventing physician burnout, and empowering people to become CEOs of their own health. We have also spoken about that in the past on this show, about being a CEO of your own health. So that's very important these days. Sandra believes that a great health coach is an ally, and each of us needs to make healthy changes that actually last. With her co-founder, Elise Wagner, and in collaboration with the Institute for Functional Medicine, Dr. Sheinbaum founded the Functional Medicine Coaching Academy in 2014. A clinical psychologist for nearly 40 years, Dr. Sheinbaum is an expert in positive psychology and mind-body medicine, and the author of Functional Medicine Coaching, Stop Panic Attacks in 10 Easy Steps, and also How to Give Clients the Skills to Stop Panic Attacks. She is a regular contributor to Forbes on Health and Wellness, as well as the host of Health Coach Talk podcast. Welcome, Dr. Sandra, to the show.
Well, thank you so much, Heather. It is a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. I'm so excited. We have lots that we can talk about. And before we do, I'm going to ask, and this is always fun to ask my health and wellness people, is what is your favorite cookie and or cookie memory?
Yeah. Oh, I would have to say it's local. So there was a company called Carol's Cookie. This woman was an entrepreneur, and she set up shop in her kitchen and she started making cookies. And pretty soon the local grocers were buying those, and they were these giant. I mean, they were as big as this screen. And oh, wow. I could still taste that oatmeal raisin. It was so, so good. So yes, a shout out to Carol's Cookies. I don't know if they still make them, if they were bought out, but there's nothing like that. And then homemade, they were the closest to homemade, and I loved making cookies with my kids.
Oh, that's awesome. We've not had Carol's Cookies as an example, so shout out to Carol's if she's still out there. Did it take you a full sitting and what, like, did you eat the whole thing, or did you save it and it lasted you like a week?
Well, most people could save it. I was addicted to sugar in my younger days when I was in my early 20s. So, I think Carol's, I started eating them when my first daughter was born. So that was like almost 40 years ago. And I could not just eat a little bit. I was never one of those people. And the time I would just, okay. I mean, these were gigantic, and I would eat the whole thing. And then of course all the guilt and shame, why did I do that? But they were delicious.
And were you pregnant? I mean, that's also a really good excuse.
Yes. Yeah. So pregnant, I would buy them, and they were always in these bins as you were checking out
of
the store. And so, so I would always would grab those, and they made chocolate chip. At that time I did have a lot of issues controlling my intake of sweets. I mean, one was definitely not enough. And I would go through, whole bags of candy and not realizing the effect it was having on my health until years later.
Sugar is awful for you. Yeah. It's, I mean, I have kids now. I mean, I have young kids, and of course sugar is like a thing, right? I mean, I've been trying to cut back, but it's hard because it's in everything, and it's in everything that they like. And so trying to get them to, I mean, I've been trying to, I mean, I'm health and wellness as well. I try to not to cut it. I have a sweet tooth too, but it usually hits me at night. And it's hard because I've been trying to scale it back because it's linked to behavior issues and focus. And so trying to weed that out. And so I'm sure you saw a link as well, in because you got the sugary cereals and you've got the, I mean, it's in everything, everything.
And early on, I became one of those health nut moms. And this was years before Whole Foods and grocers were in existence. Now you could go into most grocery stores, or Walmart or Target, and find a lot of organic and a lot of good substitutes. But at the time, that didn't exist. So I belonged to a food co-op. We used to have cases. We did order off a company in Madison, Wisconsin. I was in the Chicago area, and we'd get caseloads. I had a bunch of friends who were with me, and we would try to have our kids have healthier substitutes. And it was challenging. And actually, looking back, I often regret, because I was also one of those. I spent time as a vegan, raw vegan, and I was thinking I could raise my kids that way, and was very dogmatic. And I would say now that it's humility, because I look back and we thought we were so right. Like, fat-free is everything, and absolutely no animal products, for example. And looking back, that's just not so. We have better research today. The science has evolved so that the things I thought I was so right about ended up being wrong. And so when I was attempting to restrict my daughters, that was not the best approach. And they still say, "Oh yeah, mom, like you were just, awful. We'd go out to dinner and like, oh, you didn't even have to say anything. We could just tell your facial expressions. We were afraid to, we were afraid to order anything off the menu that, you would be very disappointed in us." So now we have those honest conversations. And if I were to do it over again, I would be much more tolerant of, them making their own choices and not restricting, because when they got to college and they went hog wild and, in terms of what they were eating, because they had been restricted. We didn't have a lot of sugary products in the house. We had all these substitutes. And but then when they went to their friend's house, or when they were old enough to be independent, that changed. And so they have to be the CEOs of their own health eventually.
Yeah, there's a lot of there's just a couple of different ones out there now, but they're very extreme and they of course have their own agenda, so they leave out important facts, and then everyone's just like, for instance, like my sister and brother-in-law are right now on this plant-based kick, and they've got young kids, but the kids are not really on it. Like they're having some, but not all. But I mean, I'll go toe-to-toe them all day long and say, well, I mean, within reason, like there's science that also backs X and Y and Z. It's all about sourcing and where you get it, not necessarily the actual animal that you're eating or whatever. And they've gone so extreme where I don't feel like it's very sustainable, which is a lot of problems that people have. But when you have kids, then you're cooking like a million different meals. Or, I mean, it's not like you have a food allergy. It's more just like a lifestyle choice. And then you go to a friend's house, or like I have a split household. I'm divorced. So like when my kids go to their dad's, I have zero control of what they eat over there. So me trying to like limit their sugar, I can only have like 50% of that because it's God knows what they eat over there. So it's difficult.
And I think it really boils down to giving up what you can't control. You cannot control somebody else. Now, if you have I have twin grandkids, and they are 18 months. So yes, you can. Even then, you could see they'll put something on their high chair tray, and no, like they'll throw it off, and I mean, they're even at that young age, they're starting to have the make up their own minds. And you can't, and as a parent, when you acknowledge that, that is so much healthier than attempting to force some things. Now, there are certain circumstances. So if your child has life-threatening food allergies, that's a different story.
Sure, of
But,
course.
I've seen relationships ruined where a child's at a birthday party and they won't allow the child to, eat certain foods, and they go into all these lectures about, oh, well, let's read the label and let's see, you know, that's, it just backfires. When my daughters were young, I mean, they were, I just shudder when I think of some of the things I thought were better. At the time, soy was everything. So we had soy hamburgers and soy hot dogs, and everything was
now soy the devil.
But, you know, and then today everything is plant-based. And, but you look at the ingredients of some of those things and they're inflammatory. And so compared to the real thing. So I think that you look at how much you can control and how, and then letting go of what is not in your control and just basically taking a deep breath. You know, the kids are resilient, and you, and as you mentioned, in terms of two households, I've seen that all the time when I was a psychologist. And for example, when one person wants to change, let's say they want to go gluten-free or dairy-free, or perhaps they've been told by the pediatrician, your child has, you know, you can't have dairy. And then they go to the other spouse, to the other parent and, or a grandparent, for example. And, you know, then it's the family relationships get ruined in the process of attempting to navigate these landmines. And so it's very, very challenging. And that's why often people need the support of a health coach to help them to sort all this out and to see where you need to draw a line in the sand in terms of, you know, in terms of foods that are going to be causing you harm, and you don't want to include those. But then there's always that, like, you can't do it 100%. And many people aim for perfection and go off the rails if one incident, you know, that right. I remember my husband, like, this was early on when we first went, we didn't call it plant-based, but I decided, okay, they're, you know, not eating meat. And she was two. I just had one daughter at the time. And he took her to McDonald's, like, oh, she said, he gave her a hot dog. He went to a local place that specialized in really good hot dogs. And so she should taste her first hot dog. I was like, oh God, it was no.
Oh, you cringed at the thought.
Yeah.
My mom does the same thing, but she just says that it needs to be a kosher hot dog. No. So I try to buy the kosher hot dogs because of the way it's prepared or whatever's in there, which it's being more mindful of like what you're putting in your body and what you're eating. But you also have to let them make their own choices, right? Like you said, like my birthday was a few months ago and it was a Thursday where they were going to their dad's after school. And so I wasn't going to see them for the evening. So I said, we'll have cake for breakfast because they wanted to celebrate. So I was like, it's fine. One time, no big deal. I don't care. Yeah, you're going to school, but whatever. We did it, but my son got sick. I don't know if it was the cake. I think he just might have just had an upset stomach and there was just a coincidence, but he blamed it on that. So he now won't touch red velvet cake. That's what we ate. And I told him, like, I warned y'all, like, if y'all wanted to do this, he insisted on picking that one out. And I didn't want to, even though it was my birthday, but like, he's six. So it's like, you can pick out mom's birthday cake, but it was so rich. And like, I knew. So when I was slicing, I'm like, y'all have to be easy. It's the first thing in the morning. You're going to school. Like, it's not like, it's just super sweet. And so he ended up coming home with a stomach ache later that day. So I got to hang out with him all day for my birthday before he went to his dad's, but he correlates it. Yeah. And I told the teacher, because she was texting me, and I was like, don't judge me. We did cake this morning. It's my birthday, but this is not an everyday thing. And she's like, oh yeah, of course, whatever. Cause you always feel so guilty, but I mean, it's a one-off. If they were having cake every morning, we would have another issue there, parenting decision.
Yeah.
But I think they correlate those things. So now he makes the decision in the mornings that I'm going to be more mindful of what I eat because it affects my day. He's six. So in the end, sometimes you just got to let them do and deal.
Oh, absolutely. So my birthday cake story, my younger daughter was turning four and we were having a party at the Park District Rec Center. And I was really into natural foods. And I was making everything from scratch. So I'm going to make a birthday cake. So I found this recipe. I made this big sheet cake. We had a lot of kids coming and I didn't use chocolate. I used something else. It was, there's I'm blocking on the name of it right now,
cacao.
Cacao. Yeah, it's not and I made the frosting and I bought the substitute for M&Ms so I could decorate with them. Anyways, bottom line, we go to serve the cake. Now my birthday girl and her older sister, they had been used to eating stuff that I was making. And my husband is video. Now this is the, early, 80s. So he's got this heavy video. Okay. He's video.
Oh yeah. The big one. Know,
the this big, big the one.
Oh yeah.
So he's capturing the scene. And so so my daughters, they take a bite of this cake and they, yum, they like it because they know it. One by one, he pans the other kids and you see they take a bite and they grimace and they spit it out and they roll and they like they've never tasted anything so awful. Anyways, how an experience like this can backfire, because I thought I was doing the right thing. I'm serving healthy, you know, now I had a sugar substitute or no sugar. I remember what I had used for that. Probably we now think it's bad for you. Like it was probably agave or brown rice syrup or
something that
they think is now full of toxins and, you know, and bad for you. But so now my daughter has used that because it was so imprinted. It was embarrassing. Like she felt bad. Like, oh, all her friends are.
I was going to say that must have like led into maybe like stress for the next birthday.
Yes.
Like no one's going to want to come because.
Yes. Exactly.
Right,
so you better believe that from there on, I went to the best, I went to the bakery and they got the Little Mermaid cake and, you know, with all the frosting that, you know, forget that it's a special occasion and whatever kind of birthday cake she wanted, you know, that was a traditional cake, but she will still remember that. And now in raising her own kids or in her own life, the choices she made has really, so it backfired. It didn't result in, you know, the eating habits that I thought were most desirable. So I think that is where, if you're dogmatic, if you just are so set that you are on the right path and don't have that sense of, well, maybe, you know, there's balances called for. So if I'm baking at home and we eat these things, but then when we go out or when, you know, she's at a birthday party or I'm serving for her birthday party, then you focus on, you know, what is the joy of the experience trumps the whatever ingredients might be deleterious to your health. So
right. She has a memory of you. Like she has a memory of you making the cake and putting the effort forward. It might not have tasted great and your friends didn't like it, but at least put the effort, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So I think people often get too hung up on those specifics, on the like specific nutrients, on the nutritionism, as opposed to just the joy of eating together, preparing a meal, serving something with love. And that will outweigh, you know, whatever it could be perhaps problematic about that food. So that's kind of it. And, you know, I'm 74 and that's what I've arrived at. That's the conclusion having seen years and years and years, both personally and professionally, of the other way backfiring.
Yeah. And I mean, it all kind of leads back to whatever you're putting in your body will have effects later, like on your sleep, on your skin, on your attitude or energy level. You know, they use the words now in school. I've got elementary school age kids and it's like fast foods versus slow foods. But then you use the word fast food for like takeout or, you know, McDonald's or something like that. And trying to, you know, encourage them to do like a, you know, say healthy, but just like a fast food when it comes to like making you feel good than the slower, you know, than slowing you down, sluggish, the sugar, the junk, the this, the that. But it's also about whatever you put in your house, like trying to make sure that you, like for me, I have a very organized pantry. I keep it very, some of my OCD issues, but they can walk in and see what they have. And if it's something I don't want them to, it's either hidden up top where they can't get, I mean, obviously they can climb, but it's not like first like grab. And so just also being strategic on how you place the items in your house to support choice for your kids, but also allowing them and supplying them with those options that you feel like could be suitable for them without being so, you know, like there's goldfish in my pantry. And when I was like super duper hardcore health, like I hadn't worked out in forever. I'm finally getting back into it. But I was pretty like regimented. So everyone's like, well, you don't eat this or that. I'm like, there's goldfish in my pantry, and there's plenty of candy because I have a sweet tooth. But it's one of those things to strategically place.
Strategically placed. And I think involving kids in meal preparation, if you have the ability to grow food, even herbs, or they have these microgreen kits, or just having them have a sense of where food comes from and have a part in the creation and involved with cooking. And there's a big movement now to get kids in the kitchen and cooking, helping to prepare meals. And then they have a sense of ownership. And then the other thing that it is so important is family meals. There's a lot of research now on the importance of having meals together. And it's challenging because kids have activities. They may be on different schedules, especially as they're getting to be teenagers. But at least once a week, if not more, to have that time when you all sit down and share a meal together. And there's something so, so valuable about that. And just focusing on the joy of being together and talking to one another and showing curiosity about how the day was and having strengths talk. That comes from positive psychology, where you focus on what went well, what strengths did you use today, or pointing those out. And so, and when it comes to meals, it's curiosity about how something, about a new ingredient, about preparing a recipe a new way, or how something tastes. And then you mentioned like your the stomach ache. So curious about your reaction. Where you start to be that your own detective, where you have a sense, oh, when I eat that, I don't feel so good. So, because I had been one of those restrictive parents in terms of sugar, my older daughter went to a birthday party given by a friend, and this was, I think she was turning 10, so double digit. They had a big celebration, and it was at a restaurant, and they had a big buffet, a suite table, basically. And she got so, it was a brunch, and she
Always
ate
sick.
so much. She was sick. We had to call, like, oh, she was in the bathroom sick because of it. So she associates that. So she learned that, oh, this is what these foods can do to me, if I
That's kind of like when you
overindulge.
turn 21 and alcohol, like too
That
much
is
is not a
right.
good thing, right?
Yep,
You just
yep.
get, and sometimes you just have to sit back and let them figure it out.
Yes.
I did that when I was in Cancun once. Ooh. That's another day, but he was like, I
Yeah.
saw. And I just, yep, you figured it out, didn't you? I'm like, yep, got it.
Yeah.
No problem. You just had to learn the hard way, like from the
Yeah.
same distance, right?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And those things will stick out. Kids will remember that.
And I guess talking like more in the psychology with like, let's say with dinner, it's a good time for connection. And I've tried all the different methods of like share like your high and your low for the day or tell me something, whatever. And like my oldest, he's going to that preteen stage, but he hates being asked questions.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't share anything at all. So trying to figure out how to, and he's the pickiest eater too. It's really fun. So dinner is super, super fun in this house. So any tactics you have there when trying to get people to open up, like kid-wise, if they are very resistant to questions or
Yeah.
explaining their day because they're just tired of talking, is what they like to say.
Sure. So I think the more specific you can be, give them prompts, make it easier, as opposed to what most people do is, how was your day?
Yeah, open
Or,
questions.
open questions, they're not going to engage with that. But if you know something, like let's say they were studying for a test the night before, or they had a project, or there was something that was going on at school, and maybe start with, like if it was a maybe they had some all school program, or what, or if you can refer back, like, oh, in science, and you can refer to the name of the teacher, Mr. So and so, like, what was the in terms of your questions could be about specifically, the exam. Like, what was something that can you name something that was on the exam that you felt like, oh, yes, I nailed it. Or, for example, it might be something pertaining to sports. And maybe there was a game if they're in athletics, and what was the best moment, of that game? that you had. Or sometimes parents do like gratitude, like naming three things that you felt.
Oh, we've tried
you
that.
Know, that
Oh,
you
we've
liked.
tried that.
So, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's fun. No, because it's like, oh, recess. And I
Yeah,
guess,
yeah.
yeah. I, for example, I did that. My son got, I get, he brought this thing home from school. His artwork was selected to be a district art thing this weekend. It has like a QR code and it's to the website, but it has no other really information other than the time and where it's going to be. So I asked him, I said, and he was super proud. Like, he's like, finally, it's my turn, you know, with Zach, with his awards with at school, and my sister with her swimming. And I'm like, well, one, you choose not to do sports or activities. Like, you had opportunity. But I was like, oh, I, you know, it's really exciting. Maybe this is something you want to look into more. I asked him what artwork was going to be. And he's like, I don't know. I'm like, really? How do you not know? Is it going to be a surprise to you too?
Yeah.
Like, when we show up, you're just going to have to hope you know which one's yours. So that's kind of like as far as I was able to get with, do you know? He's like, no. Like, so trying to figure that out.
Yeah. Often it might be too much, like the over reliance on questions.
Yeah.
And you could just go to share to make a statement about, you know, so picking out something that you know about. And so reflecting back, and it could be something, you know, talk about your own day, talk about things that you're grateful for. I've also seen, this comes from Sean Stevenson, the nutritionist, who has a great book, by the way, it's the Family Cookbook, and about, it's all about sharing meals. And I heard him on a podcast, and he talks about like they do some things with their utensils at the at family meals where they compose rap songs. And
oh,
they're
boy.
just like, you know, each person has to go around and adding something, and they're into the rhythm of the doing with their eating utensils. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a Q&A, which they may, it, you feel like I get, I mean, it's like pulling teeth to give them volunteer information, but perhaps it can be something else. Perhaps it's a trivia game. Perhaps it's something that would be in like a competition or some, you know, game-like. That
right.
Can do, or you know, if you do some people do like Wordle, and you raise, you know, who can get the word fast, or you know, whatever might appeal to them in terms of some kind of guessing game. I've also seen on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being the absolute fast, fantastic day, with 1 being miserable, you know, not and have them rate that. So where they fall is something else that I've seen that can engage kids, or giving them multiple choices. So usually now, so in my years in special education, if kids had expressive language issues, or if it's easier often to recognize than to recall. So you can, you know, give them multiple choices. Did this, this, or this, you know, was your reaction A, B, or C? And sometimes that's the way, and break it up, like, so that it's not every day, it's the same question, the same conversation, but making it or interesting, or talking about the actual food, like, you know, thoughts about it, rate, you know, how, what could they add? How can they improve it? How can they, or menu planning, you know, activity, like, what can we plan for tomorrow night? What's going to appeal to you? Or so just anything to get communication going, and also to know that it's okay. You know, if you don't want to talk about it, no big deal. You know, we can still have a good meal together.
Yeah. Typically the data dump and the sharing is tuck in time at bedtime. Usually it's like, and then you're like, oh my God, I've waited all day for you to talk to me. And now you're doing it now. And
oh,
I want to
so
hear
cool.
about it. It's great.
Yeah.
But I got 2 other kids to tuck in. And
yeah.
So, but that's also when they feel like the best offload.
Yeah.
So you also find the time that's best for your kids to share too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's a really good point. And that's a private time.
Yeah.
So it's not everybody, you know, sitting around and together.
True. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, this was super fun. Not the direction I thought we'd be going, but this is great. Cause I think it's just a big, it's always going to be a topic about health and your kids, and dinner is always such a struggle,
yeah,
especially with littles, and trying to make sure that have something, finding the time to, one, to cook. Like I'm a big fan of Cassie Joy Garcia and Cook Once, Eat All Week. She's been on
Yes,
the
I
podcast a
love
couple of
that.
times. She's amazing. And just finding the time, but she does a lot of gluten-free. Like she has the recipe, but then she gives, if you want gluten-free, sub this. If you want dairy-free, sub this. So she gives you the options, but without like making you feel like you only can cook it this way, which is really nice.
That's
And
great.
shows you how to prep. And so you have to be also very intentional with your time to make sure that if it is something you want to implement, you gotta just execute it. And so working it out that way as well. Kids love that too. So tell us a little more about how you help and what you're currently doing and how we can find you if our listeners gravitate to anything we talked about.
Sure. So I run a school to train health coaches, and we need health coaches more than ever. We have a severe shortage of mental health professionals, growing worse, trying to find a primary care provider who will be like the old family physician is often very, very challenging. And what people need often is the support, the encouragement. They need an ally, often a guide. It's very confusing with nutritional recommendations, any kind of health research. It's contradictory. What the hell should I eat? And often you need support. And also people, maybe if you're going through a health crisis yourself or with a child, and now you want to give back and you want to help others, it's a way of supporting, and you don't need a degree in healthcare to be a health coach. So they can find us at functionalmedicinecoaching.org. You can find our Instagram at Functional Med Coach, or me personally at Dr. Sandy. That's Sandi.
Oh, that's amazing. Functional health and wellness is always. It's, again, I've had a lot of that on this podcast because I think a lot of people are trying to go more of the natural route, but not so extreme because of just all the, I mean, every kid and every person has like a internet access. So you Google something, it's
Yes.
like cancer, everything, and then cancer, or it could be this, this, or this, and the spectrum is super wide, and then you start like panicking, and when you go back to the functional health, like hormone balance and foods and elimination to see like if it's something that's in your diet versus, having patience as well. So I think that that's like the biggest hot topics at the moment. So I think that this is a fantastic profession for you. And you're also a doctor. What is your PhD in?
Clinical psychology.
Clinical psychology.
Yeah, so I was a teacher many, many years ago, a special education teacher. I taught people how to be teachers of kids with special needs. Then I got a doctorate in clinical psychology, and I was a health psychologist for close to 40 years. Worked with a lot of kids, a lot of families, a lot of people with physical condition. ADHD was, I ran clinics for helping kids and adults with ADHD. Did controlled studies of that using neurofeedback. And then when I was 65 and everybody in my circle was retiring, I had a mission to train people to be health coaches. And so the Institute for Functional Medicine trains the doctors in this functional medicine approach. And we train health coaches to partner with the doctors or start their own businesses. And there's just such a demand for this, specifically since the pandemic, because people are waking up to the fact that they are responsible for their own health. And with the explosion of information, it's also very, very confusing. You read studies just out saying intermittent fasting increases your risk of heart disease. There's a study that came out about
Oh,
two.
I've not heard
Yeah, it's
that
been,
one. I intermittent fast. Like
I know.
what?
All Dave Asprey and Mike Mussel, so many people are going on the internet. My colleague Dr. Howard Chalkin, who is a cardiologist, integrative cardiologist, they have all been on social media picking apart that study. It was so flawed. And so, but you'll have these splashy headlines, and then you panic, like, what? I thought this was good for you. Same thing. There was a, you know, so the too much protein. There's a controversy there. So, but that study again was picked apart. It was very flawed. I had a social media reel that I did about that one in particular. They showed that the study showed if you have too much protein, it's going to lead to heart disease. But what did they give as the protein in the study? They gave one of those drinks. It was Boost, which is like an insurer. Well, if you look at the ingredients, it's a mile long. It's a cocktail of chemicals. It includes canola oil, which is inflammatory. It includes a lot of sugar. It's really junk. And so you got to really learn about the studies. And that's what health coaches can help people to sort out these controversies that you're hearing every day, it seems, in nutrition. So, or in exercise, for example. So, and how
I was health and wellness. I was exercise science major and kinesiology major, a bachelor of science. And I was a certified personal trainer, and, you know, you do your nutrition and your anatomy and all that. So I have like the baseline of, but then when you like, now I intermittent fast and I carb cycle and I just, you know, but taking bits and pieces and having the knowledge is one thing. But like I was saying, with my sister and my brother-in-law saw this documentary on, I think it was Netflix, and they take it. And I was like, and they were so gung ho about it. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to watch it. And I just watch it. So what I do is I like to educate myself on why first, and then let's just see. Yeah. And then I'm going to pick that apart if there's something to pick. And so it was a good documentary, had a lot of good information, but it was very much like honing in on, like, of course they're going to show the extreme of like where chickens, like the farm raised, but like they're going to show the extreme, like that's not where you're getting your fish at your grocery store. Yes, it's out there, it's a shame, someone should do something about it, but that's not like the big picture. But it's like the scare mentality. Mm-hmm. Right. So then people do all these extremes, but then when they were doing, it's called the twin, I think it was like the twin experiment, where like you are what you eat. And they had a lot of good data.
Yeah.
And it was a really good study. But in the end, I think there was 21, what no one like sees is there's 21 sets and they only highlighted 4 of them, which shows that most likely they didn't get the results they wanted on the other ones. And so they highlight these because they had the best-ish results. And even those were like what we thought would happen, is when you take out animal protein, you won't be able to gain as much muscle. And with the, of course you're going to lose more with plant-based, but you're not eating as much because it's not as dense and doesn't keep you fuller, but it's also fiber. It's like a whole thing. So if you don't have that background and you're watching something, you go to extremes. And I think it's important that this culture should give you the whole picture, in my opinion.
That's right. And there is this growing movement of bias towards plant-based. It's such a buzzword. And it's really looking at, you know, how did we survive for thousands of years before we look, and the ultra processed. So most people who go plant-based, now you are setting yourself up for a whole cascade of issues that may not be apparent immediately. And often what's attributable to the plant-based changes you're making is that what you're not eating, because maybe now you're not getting the
vitamins and minerals that you'd be getting from the other things. That is reason why it's on the pyramid.
Yes. And maybe you are giving up a lot of the animal products that are ultimately highly processed, the fast food. You're not going through the McDonald's drive-through and getting the cheeseburgers, the triple cheeseburgers. So there's you might be feeling better. Maybe your lab markers have changed because of that, but it's not sustainable. And that's what most of the nutritional experts say. And that's what I found, because I did this for a long time. I started when I was in my late 30s. I read a book, Diet for a New America, that went into detail about, you know, the big food processors of animal products. Oh, this is disgusting. So I gave up red meat, then I gave up chicken, and I was a total vegan for a while. And I never felt worse, but I didn't know it. You know, I was anemic, I was low in B12, and I didn't have energy. So now I have been, I'm not carnivore, but my diet is heavily animal-based with lots of protein, because where I am in my life stage, it's critical. because most people are at risk for sarcopenia. They become under muscled. And so I eat tons of, so now I go into a restaurant and I'll order a steak. And even my husband says, oh my God, that's so much food. That's so, you know, are we going to eat that? And I do, because I need that to keep and even build muscle mass.
Well, if you 70s. See your arms, like, you are a very fit woman at 70 something. And that's 74, amazing. Cause yeah. I'm like staring at she, because this isn't on video, but you have a tank top on and your arms are just fantastic. And I'm like, I want arms like that. And I am your age. I mean, it's important to build muscle though. Cause I actually lose a lot. Like when I don't work out, I lose weight.
Yeah.
And it's not because I'm losing good weight. I'm losing my muscle mass. Yeah. And I'm like skinny fat. Like it's just the flabby, like, I mean, I'm not calling myself fat by any means. So if anyone sees me on social media, that's not what I'm saying, but like, I lose my muscle mass. Like I'm not as like, you know, firm.
Yes. Yeah, I was skinny fat my whole life because I was not athletic. I was not, didn't do sports. And I was of that era where it wasn't ladylike, but even those, I was just terrible at it. And yes. So, and very under muscled. And, but so I didn't start aggressively strength training until like late 60s and put on muscle. So it is possible. But we lose 10% of our muscle with every decade. And
right.
It's just a natural process. And every time, and yo-yo dieting, every time we lose weight, we're losing muscle. And now they have scales that are getting better and better, where you can not only get your body weight, which is not relevant because you could be all muscle and you're healthy, even though, you know, you were at a higher weight, but you can see your skeletal muscle mass and track it. And but it is, so the amount of protein you need to maintain that or to build it is much higher. And so, and it's so hard to get from plant-based diets. It just, yeah. You'd have to be eating like an entire bowl of beans. Like, I mean, a huge,
which,
you know,
is
like
awful on your digestive portion. System.
Yeah, exactly.
It's terrible for your digestive system. Yeah. And then you could have colon issue. Like it's a whole thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think that it is, you know, look, that's where we've evolved in the science. But there are a lot of people who are proselytizing and they have an agenda. And the agenda is definitely, you know, not looking at the science necessarily. It's for other reasons.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds like you have the science nailed down with you and your coaches. And so I really encourage everyone to go and check you out, and all of the information will be in the show notes. This was a really great conversation. I think we touched on a lot of things, hot topics. I'm sure we've probably also had some hot buttons. So if we've touched a hot button, please tell us, because we like to, why not, right? It creates conversation and then you can grow and learn and all that fun stuff. So thank you so much for being here and sharing all of your knowledge and your past experiences with us.
Thank you for having me. It was a delight to talk with you.
Absolutely. Thank you. And you're always welcome back. So please, you know, feel free. And for those who are listening, if you guys enjoyed this conversation, please don't forget to rate it and like it and go check out Dr. Sandy and podcast and give us your opinions. And don't feel like you can't reach out. And if you are looking for a functional health and wellness coach, Sandy is a great resource. I can tell you everything we've talked about checks all the boxes that I have been following. So please continue to listen to Chaos and Cookies podcast, and we will take you on the next one. Thank you for listening to the Chaos and Cookies podcast. If you want more goodies and friends to share them with, follow the crumbs to the Facebook group or visit the Chaos and Cookies website to grab my sweet secrets on how to calm your cookies. Don't forget to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. See y'all next week for another episode of Chaos and Cookies.